Well, we don't have an official quorum, but I'm going to start the meeting, and when we do get one more member in here, we'll work on the minutes for a brief time. And I would ask members today to only ask clarifying questions during the presentation and save your bigger policy questions till the presentation is completed. And with that, Scott Leitch, are you going first or second? Okay. And would you please identify yourself for the tape?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Leitch. I'm Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Brian Osberg, an Assistant Commissioner of the Healthcare Administration, the Minnesota Department of Human Services.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to come before you this afternoon to discuss the governor's proposal on healthcare reform. The governor's proposal is titled Healthy Connections, and we're going to walk through the elements of that proposal for you today. You should have as handouts a copy of the slides we'll be going to, as well as a number of other handouts that hopefully will provide information on the proposal for you. We'll try to refer to those as we go through.
If you can hold out just for a second, we now have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. And Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the minutes.
Thank you. Is there any discussion of the minutes? It's the first time anybody's ever volunteered for that job. any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Commissioner Leitch, continue, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The governor's proposal for healthcare reform really grows out of three key elements that we see going on in the healthcare marketplace right now. The first, as this committee is probably acutely aware, is the issue of unsustainable healthcare cost growth, both on the private sector side and in public health insurance programs. One of the key concerns that we have as we look at the data around how fast healthcare costs are growing is the fact that they're outstripping growth in wages for your average worker, outstripping growth in the overall economy, outstripping personal income, and so more and more of an average worker's paycheck is going to pay for health insurance, and so that's a concern. The second is that we have a system both here and in Minnesota as well as nationwide that really rewards volume over value. And what I mean by that is that the way that we currently pay for health care rewards doing more and more services as a way of getting paid more and more for the care rather than paying for those services that actually provide value and good outcomes for people. And then thirdly, and obviously this third point really is related to the first point, is that coverage is becoming increasingly unaffordable as a result of the growth in underlying costs. And so those are elements that the governor's proposal attempts to address. There's really five main goals in the governor's overall proposal. The first is to restructure the Minnesota Care Program in a way that is more modern and focused on health, and to increase affordable access to coverage both through Minnesota Care as well as in the private sector to coverage for children in our state. A third element and key goal of the proposal is to realign coverage and incentives in a way that focuses more on quality and value rather than volume of services. A fourth goal is to expand the private sector options available to individuals by capitalizing on opportunities for tax savings and providing greater choice of health insurance plans for individuals and employees who work for small businesses and businesses that don't offer health insurance coverage. And then the final goal of the governor's overall proposal is to streamline the administrative burden that small employers face in offering health insurance coverage. There are three main elements to our reform proposal. Commissioner Osberg will talk about the first element, which is to modernize and improve the affordability of Minnesota Care. And then we'll also discuss the other two elements, which are to allow and encourage greater use of pre-tax dollars to purchase health insurance coverage in our state, and to make enrollment in insurance coverage easier and more transparent through the establishment of the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. With that, I'll turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Osberg.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what I'd like to do is modernize, if you will, Minnesota Care by doing the following. One is to expand access to coverage and improve affordability for children, expanding eligibility and reducing premiums by and large. Number two is to expand choice for enrollees, especially those enrollees who are in Minnesota Care over 200% of federal poverty guideline. Number three is to reward healthy behaviors. We'll get into that a little bit more. And number four is to promote quality and value. First is to expand coverage of Minnesota Care eligibility for kids to 300%. Right now it's at 275% of the federal poverty guideline. At 300%, we're talking about $60,000 for a family of four. Now we're defining children up to age 21 in this situation. Second is to expand medical assistance for infants up to age 2 to 305% of the federal poverty guideline, which is $61,000 for a family of four. Now, the reason we need to do that is because the federal government, with the State Children's Health Insurance Program, SCHIP, you've heard about that, I'm sure. In fact, that's up for reauthorization this year in Congress. There's a requirement under that program for us to secure SCHIP dollars. We need to have a standard for eligibility that's at least 5% higher than the standard for other for kids in general. Because what we want to do here is we want to, even though this proposal does not assume we'll get federal financial participation, the fiscal note does not assume that for this expansion, we want to try to get that participation. And so we intend to apply for that to the federal government. So we want to make sure that we have this. And right now, the standard for infants up to age 2 is 280% of FPG. So we go from 280% to 305% of the federal poverty guideline in order to secure that SCHIP funding. And that's real important because SCHIP funding is 60% federal dollars. Now, what's ironic is that it's used for parents because we covered kids before the SCHIP program passed in 1997. And so we still need that money because it's $46 million, for example, for this fiscal year. Next is to expand further access to coverage and improve affordability by reducing Minnesota Care premiums for families. A couple of years ago, 2005, I believe, there was an increase in Minnesota Care premiums of 8%. Now, that has not been yet approved by the federal government. Sometimes it takes a period of time for them to approve certain things, and maybe this just as well. So we're suggesting we repeal that 8% increase in premiums before it does go into effect. So right now it's not in effect. What happens now in Minnesota Care is that we set premiums according to income. What we do is that there's a sliding scale. The higher income, it's a progressive scale, up to 9.8% of income at the top end. For parents and kids today, that says 275% of the federal poverty guideline. So their contribution, their premium, is roughly 9.8% on the top end. And so we think that is high enough. In fact, we're going to bring it down for kids under our proposal here. So we're suggesting to repeal the 8% premium increase that's on the books today. The second is to restructure the way Minnesota Care premiums are charged for the kids. Right now, we don't distinguish in our system between kids and adults as to how much we charge for premiums. A family would pay premiums for adults and premiums under a reduced scale for children, up to 3 children per family under this new arrangement. Now, one of the major reasons we know for disenrollment in Minnesota Care, which has come down the last 3 years, is because of inability to pay premiums. We know that is obviously the prevalent reason for that disenrollment. This is these ideas to how this would be structured. Under the current Minnesota Care arrangement, again, we pay the premiums paid by individual, no matter what age. Under the restructured arrangement, adults would continue to pay the same rate they're paying today, but premiums for children come down significantly, as you can see from this slide. The premium scale for children would charge premiums roughly one-third the cost of adult premiums under this arrangement.
Representative Thiessen.
Just a brief question on that. It's more explanatory. Under the current premiums, is that a per child number? Or is that...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, on the current premium, that's per individual. Under the current structure, that's per individual, notwithstanding age, whether it's a child or adult. That's okay. How we structure it today.
And it's also per individual under the new premiums.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, that's true.
Oh, okay.
The children would be much less, one-third of the rate of the adults under the new structure for Minnesota Care. Now, this is for the current Minnesota Care program.
Just to follow up on that.
Representative Thiessen.
What does the premiums vary by household size mean, then?
Premiums vary by household size in the sense that we cap. At one point, we cap, and I have to find out where that is. Somebody can help me with that. We cap premiums at a certain family size. But we charge premiums based on family size, the number of individuals in the family. For example, we'll take examples of how it works today and how it will work differently under this new arrangement. On the next slide, this is where we're introducing a new product, if you will, a new option for people in Minnesota Care, over 200% of the federal poverty guideline. And that's what we're calling Minnesota Care 2. And whereby we're subsidizing private coverage. Right now, under Minnesota Care, we do negotiate contracts with managed care organizations, with 9 managed care organizations. They have to be licensed HMOs. Under this arrangement, Minnesota Care 2 made available through something called the Exchange, which Mr. Leitz will talk about later on. And this arrangement will have more options available to them. And be an opportunity for lower premiums for children. This option is just for kids at this point, not for adults. Let's make that clarification. And so let me go into an example. As I said, under the current Minnesota Care premium structure, we pay the premium is set based on an individual and not regardless of age. Under the new structure, as I said, adults would maintain the same rate, but under Minnesota Care, premiums would come down. In Minnesota Care 2, they come down even further. It'd be a half of what they are under regular Minnesota Care. And I'll talk about why that is in a second. But by and large, we're structuring premiums to make it more affordable for children if they opt into Minnesota Care 2, which will be made available through this exchange that we're going to discuss in a few minutes. Now, here's the examples that I think you're looking for. One is under current Minnesota Care structure. We have 2 adults and 2 children. At 225% of poverty, which is roughly $45,000 income, we have a premium of $316 a month. The current scale is $105 for one, $211 for two, and $316 for 3 or more persons covered. Now, if the 8% premium increase went into effect, that $316 would go up to $341. Now, under the new structure, again, this is for regular Minnesota Care, and I'll get into Minnesota Care 2 in a minute. Under the new structure, the cost would come down for kids. The family premium would be $295 per month, with the adults still being charged at the 2-person level for $211, and kids at $42 each. So the premium would be $295. Now, we're also going to introduce to you how this is going to come down further, because what we're going to make available to people in Minnesota Care is a pre-tax contribution arrangement. It's known as Section 125. Mr. Weiss will get into that. But we're going to make that available not only to people who have private coverage, but people who have Minnesota Care arrangements as well, so that they can come in and take advantage of what's called Section 125, where you use your pre-tax dollars, like we do in our own insurance arrangement for the state, towards Minnesota Care premiums. It'll be an added, certainly, advantage to our Minnesota Care enrollees. Now, under Minnesota Care 2, again, available for children only, there would be a $253 per month premium. This is how the calculation would take place. Because we would bring, again, that we cut in half the premium for children from $42 a month to $21 per month. Now, the benefit structure is different, and I'll get to that in a second. So far, any questions on technical questions on this? Now, as we talked about, part of this proposal is to expand coverage for kids from 200% to 300% of poverty. And we also want to have, as I said, reduced premiums under this arrangement, Minnesota Care 2, to choose a private option. And this gives enrollees incentives to consider cost and quality in making critical decisions around their care as well as around their insurance option. Now, this is how the private market option would work. We would establish, and it would be defined more specifically by the health insurance exchange, establish a standard benefit set for Minnesota Care enrollees with a $300 to $500 deductible, roughly is what we would begin with in looking at, as opposed to no deductible at all in regular Minnesota Care. Now, we have co-payments in Minnesota Care, and there may be some co-payments here. But the big difference between Minnesota Care 2 for kids and regular Minnesota Care is that there will be a deductible. We're thinking at this point that be around $300 to $500 a year for kids.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Assistant Commissioner. Is that $500 deductible, is that per person? So in this family of four, each individual would have a separate $500 deductible. It only applies to the children. Can you explain how that applies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I believe it's deductible for the family of up to three kids. So it would be for the family. For the three kids. If there's three kids in the family, it would be the deductible, total deductible would be $300 to $500.
Representative Loeffler.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Assistant Commissioner, just to clarify, so that in our hypothetical family of four with two children and two adults, the total deductible for that family would be $500. So they'd save $42 a month in premium, but they'd be at risk of $500 total for all those four lives.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Loeffler, I'm going to ask that somebody come down and help with that. Please.
Yeah.
Department of Health.
Yes, here's my clarification question.
Could you state your name for the tape?
Yeah, members of the committee, my name is April Todd Malma. I'm the Assistant Director of the Health Economics Program. And in response to your question, the deductibles for Minnesota Care 2 would be $500 per child up to three children. So if they had four children in a family that enrolled in this policy, they would only be charged three deductibles of $1,500. Parents are not part of the Minnesota Care 2 program, so they would not be getting subsidies under the Minnesota Care 2 program.
Representative Loeffler.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I think I understand it, but let me repeat it back so that I'm it's clear. And that is, if you had our hypothetical family of four, let's just say with the one that you've given us examples on, they would incur potentially two $500 out-of-pocket deductibles in exchange for saving $42 a month or a little over $400. So they would have to assume the risk of an additional $600 out-of-pocket costs in exchange for that reduced premium. And if they had over three children, you keep saying about up to three children, what happens if you have four children?
If you have four children, they would pay the premiums for three children. The fourth child would essentially be free. They wouldn't be paying a premium for that child. And the deductibles would be also for three children. So if they had four children, the max deductible that they would pay would be $1,500.
Any other questions? Representative Bunn.
Chair and presenters, assistant commissioners, a little bit of follow-up on the line of questioning that Representative Loeffler has. In terms of the deductible in this program, is this deductible apply also to preventive, or is preventive just a non-deductible component of these programs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, no, it would not apply to preventive services.
Continue.
Again, as I mentioned earlier, Mr. Chairman, that we would be seeking a federal match on this program, but this the estimates do not assume that federal match. The next feature of this is to expand enrollee choice. All health plans with more than 3% of the individual market would be required to offer the Minnesota Care 2 standard plan. There are four such plans in the market today, Blue Cross, America, Health Partners, and Fortis, I believe the four. Correct me if I'm wrong, is that right? And so they'd be, those four would be required. They're the ones who would have more than 3% of the individual market today. They'd be required to offer this product. Just like in the managed care arrangement, regular Minnesota care, the current health plans, HMOs, are required to provide coverage to our clients. They're required to participate in our clients' care. Health plans would also be able to offer up to three products in addition to the standard plan based on what's called actuarial equivalence. They can offer some other variations of this, but they would have to be actuarially equivalent to whatever the standard benefit set would be. And then next, the health plans would also offer these products to adults, but without a subsidy, so that if the adults wish to participate in this program, and if they don't have a subsidy in regular Minnesota care, they could participate in this without a subsidy.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just so I understand what the impact is on enrollees, you have four plans that would meet this 3% threshold. So in Hennepin County, where we have five plans currently available, we'd have four that could have up to four products. That'd be 16 choices plus the smaller one. So we'd have, for every enrollee in Hennepin County, potentially 17 different choices of coverage plus the regular classic.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, no, that would not be the case. There are four plans available in Hennepin County today for regular Minnesota care. That's true. And then for this different option, it's a private option, there would be at least four required. That's true. Four insurance companies required to participate in this program. There could be more than that. That's possible. But, in fact, it's possible that the current managed care organizations that serve our Minnesota care people in Minnesota, in Hennepin County, would other health plans could potentially offer this product as well. So there may be, that's true, there may be maybe five or six plans offering this to Minnesota care and all these, but not, I don't know how you got to 17.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Assistant Commissioner, what I'm going from is health plans could offer up to three products in addition to the standard plans. I'm taking each of those four plans times four unique products, plus you're going to have the classic.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I see what you're saying. In terms of the Minnesota Care 2 piece, there's different products available to them. So those four plans could offer, that's true, three. But, again, most of those plans already in Hennepin County include Blue Cross and Health Partners. Not Blue Cross, but include Health Partners and Medica. So there could be maybe 10, 12 different product offerings for people over 200% of FPG. That's true.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Osberg, could you just give me a working definition of actuarially equivalent, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It means financially they have the benefits have the same financial value. So it could vary in terms of co-payments or deductible or cost sharing in general, but it has the same actuarial value in terms of the benefits provided. So that's what actuarial equivalence means.
Commissioner.
On the next point, we also want to introduce ability to reward healthy behaviors for Minnesota care clients. In our regular Minnesota care plan, there would be a premium reduction incentive, a reduction of $3 per month for children who meet acute care preventive care goals. Acute care is the initiative the governor announced last summer to encourage the provision of preventive services and ability for people that receive what's called optimal care for diabetes and cardiovascular services. And so if indeed a child receives those preventive visits and preventive services, it would be an additional $3 per month incentive. Now, why is $3? Because the minimum premium for a child is $4 a month. If a child is under 150% of federal poverty guideline in Minnesota Care, then it's a $4 premium. So they would be able to receive a $3 per month incentive if they met the acute care preventive goals. This includes well child visits, immunization services, and other services that are detailed in our acute care initiative that was announced last summer. And then there's the reduction of $3 per month for adults who meet acute care goals for diabetes and cardiac care. Those goals are for optimal care, meaning that they've actually not only received what is right and what's appropriate, but they actually have good results. There's five measures as to what, for diabetes, for example, as to what optimal care is. An example is blood pressure, the cholesterol level, whether or not you smoke, your A1C 3 levels. Those are the critical standards in terms of calculating optimal care under for diabetes. And so there would be an incentive in reducing premiums for that as well, with a $15 premium reduction maximum per family.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Osberg, you said earlier in one of the slides that there was no provision for preventative care, and I'm just wondering if you can relate back to that. I'm trying to... You're saying here in this slide there's a reduction of $3 per month for children who meet preventive care goals, but yet in one of the other slides you were saying something that there was no provisions for preventative care services.
No, Mr. Chairman, there's no the deductible or any copayments do not apply to preventive care visits. That's what I was referring to before. So
okay.
There's no deductible associated with that.
Okay, thank you.
Then under Minnesota Care 2, there would be also incentives for meeting these goals. And it would be a $50 annual bonus for up to 3 children per family for meeting the acute care preventive goals. And to this could be used to offset health care costs, deductibles, and any cost sharing they may have. And this could accumulate over time, this account. And the exchange would track this for these clients that are enrolled in Minnesota Care 2. And so this can be carried forward over 1 year to the next. That, Mr. Chairman, completes the Minnesota Care modernization provisions, and then Mr. Leitz will go into the next aspect of this proposal.
Commissioner Leitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've heard from Assistant Commissioner Osberg about our proposal to improve the affordability, access, and choice in the existing Minnesota Care program. The next elements of the Healthy Connection proposal seek to improve the affordability and accessibility to health coverage for those enrolling in the private insurance market, as well as those through Minnesota Care 2. The first element I'm going to talk about is to allow and encourage greater use of pre-tax dollars for individuals buying individual insurance coverage in the marketplace today. Today, those of us who have employer-based health insurance coverage enjoy access to pre-tax funds. Our employer, the coverage that we enroll in is done through pre-tax dollars. However, persons who purchase outside of a group do not have that same ability to use pre-tax funds to purchase coverage. So the second part of the plan seeks to expand the ability of employees of businesses who do not offer health insurance coverage to use pre-tax dollars to purchase that coverage.
Commissioner Leitz, are you assuming that the state would change the state tax laws to match the federal?
Mr. Chair, right now under federal law and under state law, the proposal that I'm going to talk about here to require employers to establish Section 125 plans would be under existing law. What would be new to law would be the requirement on employers to establish those plans. What we do propose to do under the plan is to require employers who have more than 10 employees to establish Section 125 plans. Section 125 refers to the section of the IRS code which allows individuals to use pre-tax dollars to purchase health insurance coverage. The requirement itself would require, as I mentioned, employers with more than 10 employees to establish plans that Section 125 plans. As I'll get to in a moment, the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange would assist those employers in setting up those Section 125 plans. employers then would have to designate the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange as their health insurance plan, and then withhold premiums as requested by their employees on a pre-tax basis and send them to the exchange where those individuals will purchase health insurance coverage. The advantage here is that employees will be able to pay for health insurance coverage with pre-tax funds if they work for an employer who does not offer health insurance coverage. And that currently is not the case for unless these plans have been established, and there aren't a great deal of these plans that have been established for this purpose. To be clear, we do not require employers to offer health insurance coverage, nor do we require the employers to contribute to the Section 125 plans that they're required to establish. But what the plan will do is allow those employees the same pre-tax benefits as those of us who enjoy employer-based coverage currently have. We estimate that the cost of the initial setup of the Section 125 plan is approximately $300. The ongoing costs are lower than that. And employers would realize some savings. They wouldn't pay payroll taxes such as Social Security, Medicare, or unemployment taxes on the amount that their employees set aside. And because of that, if more than two employees enroll on average, that employer is likely to break even. And if more enroll, they actually likely will come out ahead as a result of the savings of the tax savings of not having those dollars taxed from an employer perspective. So how substantial are the savings that might result from the use of pre-tax dollars? Couple of examples. This first one takes a look at single parents with two children. And I want to acknowledge here, in your packet of information, I believe you have a memo from Paul Wilson at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I want to acknowledge the analysis that Paul did, as well as the database that he built along with Don Hirasuna from House Research. It has been very valuable in looking at what are the potential tax savings for going to pre-tax accounts. And this the examples here are drawn from the analysis that Paul and has done. This takes a look at the potential tax, the potential savings as a percentage of premium costs. So take your average insurance premium in the marketplace. You have a single parent with two children at various income levels. If they're allowed to establish Section 125 plans and put away dollars pre-tax to pay for their health insurance premiums, what percentage of that premium will they save in doing so? Right now, what they would save would be their marginal rate as it relates to the state and federal income taxes, as well as FICA taxes. At the lower income level, you see that rather substantial decrease at the $30,000 level, and that's because the federal earned income tax credit and Minnesota working family credit also operate at those income levels. Dollars that are put away pre-tax are not used in the calculation of income as it relates to those federal and state programs, and so more individuals would become eligible for those programs. And so, if those dollars were applied towards premium, we see that the premium reduction is quite substantial, around 60% relative to marketplace premiums right now for people at those modest income levels. It phases out at somewhat higher income levels, and the savings really relate to the income tax rates at the federal and state level, as well as that flat FICA tax. Similarly, I'm not going to go through specifically each of these examples, but you see a similar example for a married couple with two children. Again, somewhat higher savings at lower incomes because of that interaction with the earned income tax credit and working family credit, phasing that out as it gets to somewhat higher income levels. And then finally, for single adults who don't have access to those programs, the percentage savings as a percent of cost really reflect the savings on income taxes as well as the flat FICA taxes.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Assistant Commissioner Light. For, and maybe you're not able to answer this question, we'll have to have Revenue or someone follow up on it, but for people who are at the higher income levels who pay the maximum Social Security, it really doesn't affect their retirement Social Security levels. But I'm wondering, for these families that are really at these low income levels, while I can see it helps their monthly cash flow to use the Section 125 plans, the fact that less money is being contributed on their behalf into Social Security, will that actually be a penalty in their retirement years when Social Security calculates what their actual monthly payment will be?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I believe what you say is accurate. It will vary by how much they put in and what their income levels are, but reductions in that would have some impact on future benefits.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Lights, is there any way you could do some hypothetical long-term examples? I'd really like to know what the long-term impact might be for these really lowest income households.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, we'll see whether we can do some of that. I can't promise anything in terms of whether we're able to, but certainly we'll make an attempt to do so and get that to the committee if we can.
Representative Abler.
Just in brief, Mr. Chair, Mr. Lights, on the same question, topic anyway, is that like pre-income then, or how does the FICA get out of there? So it's not even considered to be income at all? Is that how the feds look at it?
Commissioner. Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, that's correct. The taxes that, when dollars are put away pre-tax, any dollars that would have otherwise been taxed as a part of payroll are exempted from that.
Representative Bud, fun.
Chair and Assistant Commissioners, I had a follow-up question regarding it. My understanding from what you explained is to participate in this, let's say your employer isn't making a contribution, but they are setting up this 125 plan. You indicated that it would have to work through this new Minnesota Insurance Exchange. And what kind of array of products overall would be available through that to them? What portion of the market? Are they only managed care? Can describe the exchange a little more for us?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, I will be getting a little bit more detail on the exchange. Just to let you know what we're proposing on the exchange will be the individual market will operate through the exchange in Minnesota. So persons with those pre-tax dollars will be purchasing individual coverage, and the array of products that are available in the market will be available to those individuals. We think in a more transparent and more understandable way than it is currently for individuals, but those will be the products that they will have available to them. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, one thing to note on the savings that relates to the tax-free nature or the pre-tax nature of these accounts, it's important to note that most of this will be federal tax savings for people. That is to say, this is a reasonably good investment from a state perspective because for every dollar that's spent at the state level, we draw down about $4 of federal dollars because most of the tax benefit relates to the federal rates as opposed to the state rates, which are lower than the federal rates currently, if that's understandable to people. Right now, under the Medicaid program, for example, the match is 50%. This would be a substantially higher match, if you will, just because federal tax rates are substantially higher than state tax rates.
Just members should understand that Representative Loeffler does have a point about losing some retirement Social Security. On the other hand, the tax savings are Minnesota money that would have gone to Washington and will stay in Minnesota. And Representative Thiessen.
No.
Okay. Commissioner, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm just trying to understand what's being proposed here, and forgive me if I'm totally missing the boat, but for example, in your slide where you have the example of saving single adult, okay, we're talking about a person who's earning $10,000 is going to save 32.6% of a premium because of the tax savings. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Okay, Mr. Chair, if I can just continue then. So we're saying then here's a person who has a $10,000 income, and we're saying that under this proposal they're supposed to go out and buy insurance with their $10,000 income, and they're incentivized to do that because they're going to get this tax saving?
Mr. Chair, Representative, first of all, a person with $10,000 of income is likely eligible for Minnesota Care as well as likely eligible for GAMC if should they fall into a situation where they need health insurance coverage. Nothing in this proposal discourages them in any way from taking advantage of those existing programs that are available to them. If they are currently uninsured and for whatever reason wish to purchase insurance coverage in the private individual insurance market and aren't currently doing so, work for an employer who doesn't offer health insurance coverage, for whatever reason, don't want to go into Minnesota Care, This would be another option available to them. I don't think in any way we're necessarily encouraging people to make that choice. What we are saying is that that would be an option available to them, but nothing in the governor's proposal here at all discourages people from enrolling in what they're currently eligible for, which would be either Minnesota Care or the General Assistance Medical Care Program.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to follow up then, I guess we need some more information then about what would be available for people to buy, what it would cost them to know whether any of this makes any sense. I mean, you know, it's your chart, and it's got that $10,000 level on it. So, if it, you know, you put it there. So,
we did.
You know, I guess I'd like to know, you know, where the cut point is. At what point is it really rational? Would any rational person try to do this? And is there any product that would make it this make any sense?
Commissioner Lloyd.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think it's likely your point is taken in the sense that it's unlikely that someone at $10,000 of income will see an individual product as being affordable simply because their incomes are very, very low. And again, the intention here was to demonstrate sort of what the savings would be across the spectrum of income levels. But clearly people at very low income levels have access to existing programs that are intended to serve them, such as the Minnesota Care Program. And there's nothing in here that discourages people from taking advantage of those programs. In fact, in many ways, we've as Commissioner Osberg went through, we've strove to really improve the affordability of those products for people.
Commissioner Leitz, would Minnesota Care be sold through the connector as well? So if someone was happened to be eligible, could also get the tax benefit? Whatever that person's share of the premium.
Mr. Chair, a couple of interactions there, and I'll get to the exchange in just a moment. The exchange would do a few things as it relates to Minnesota Care. First, it would allow people to pay for their Minnesota Care premiums with pre-tax dollars, so that if people are enrolling in Minnesota Care, by definition, they don't have access to employer-based coverage, at least subsidized at a level higher than 50%, and so they would have access to those pre-tax accounts to be able to put dollars away in the exchange to purchase insurance coverage. If they're enrolling in the Minnesota Care Program, the original Minnesota Care Program, they would be able to take those pre-tax dollars and work with the Human Services Department to enroll just as they do now. If they're enrolling in the Minnesota Care 2 option, which is the private market option, they would indeed do that enrollment through the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange because they would be purchasing a private market insurance product. And Mr. Chair, as a good segue into the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange, we are proposing as the third element of the Healthy Connections proposal to establish the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. It's intended to do a few things. And I've sort of listed some of the goals of the program here. We really are looking to improve access and affordability to coverage for people who don't have access currently through an employer. Again, that's through the use of those pre-tax 125 accounts. Anyone who's tried to deal with the individual insurance market knows that you can find policies, but it can sometimes be a daunting task to actually transparently shop among those products to find a product that actually fits your needs. And so one of the goals is to increase the transparency and functioning of the individual insurance market by making that information more readily available to individuals. We seek to streamline and simplify the administrative burden for small employers, and I'll get to that in a moment, but really what we're getting at here is for small employers currently who don't offer health insurance coverage, this would be a way for them to provide in a relatively straightforward manner by setting up a Section 125, something that's of benefit to their employees. Those employees would be able to put dollars away pre-tax. The exchange would serve, in a sense, as playing the human resources function for those employers by providing an array of choices of products that those employees can enroll in and would allow those individuals to then purchase that coverage through a relatively transparent front end. We think it promotes affordability of health insurance coverage because people who are enrolled in the exchange can move across the products at enrollment time as they choose to do so and would have the ability as they change jobs to the extent that they continue to be enrolled through pre-tax dollars to be able to move across products more easily than they can currently. And then, as I mentioned, it would provide access to the Minnesota Care 2 program, which is where enrollment would occur for that particular private market option that Assistant Commissioner Osberg described. The exchange itself would have several functions. The first would be to help employers fulfill their requirement to establish Section 125 plans. Remember, in the proposal, we will be requiring employers with more than 10 employees to establish Section 125 plans. The exchange will be responsible for providing a toolkit for providing helplines to those employers in meeting that obligation to establish those plans. As I mentioned, one of the things that's a challenge right now for people purchasing in the individual market is that comparative shopping among health insurance plans is challenging. There's no single place to go right now that has that in all the information around what products are available, at what cost, with what benefits. The exchange will be responsible for providing that transparent and understandable information to people enrolling in individual products in Minnesota. Again, I want to make the point, because it is an important one, that we do envision the individual market operating through the exchange. That is to say, all products sold in Minnesota that are in the individual market will be sold through the health insurance exchange under the proposal. The exchange will have a responsibility to assist people to enroll in those plans by answering questions, by providing that information in terms of what's available to them, again, just as a human resources department does now. It will receive the pre-tax payments from employers. Employers will be responsible for withholding the dollars from individuals' paychecks to be placed in those 125 accounts. Those 125 accounts, an individual will essentially, in a sense, have an account at the exchange. So the exchange will receive those pre-tax payments, and the individual will access those accounts at the exchange and purchase health insurance coverage. It will also receive subsidy payments from the state for people enrolled in the Minnesota Care 2 plan and pass them through on behalf of those individuals to health plans that are operating through the exchange. And then finally, it will administer the bonus accounts and premium reductions for the Minnesota Care enrollees meeting their acute care targets that Assistant Commissioner Osberg described earlier. So there's an array of functions that the exchange will do. Again, much of this focused on A, ensuring a more transparent marketplace, and B, allowing easier access to coverage for individuals who do not currently have coverage through their employer.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Lights, this new exchange that's going to be set up will require how many new FTEs to administer it?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have costed out the proposal for the exchange startup as a one-time startup of approximately $12 million of the biennium. I will be honest and say that we haven't. We envisioned the exchange being a nonprofit entity, not a part of government. So it would be a freestanding nonprofit entity that would have responsibility for hiring sufficient staff to actually staff the exchange and perform the functions that we've laid out here. But because it's not part of government, we haven't fiscal loaded the exact number of FTEs. Rather, we have fiscal loaded what we believe to be an adequate startup cost to get the exchange established, get the systems in place, and then give responsibility to an exchange that's established as a nonprofit entity that will hire an executive director, have a governing board, and then would hire a staff to complete its tasks.
Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Light, so the exchange is this freestanding nonprofit accountable to a nonprofit board of directors, but I'm just envisioning the cash flow of the money that's going through there on a monthly basis. I mean, they've got quite a float. And what safeguards do you have to ensure that they are actually going to be objective in helping people evaluate their options? If I'm a self-employed person and I go to the exchange and they have all 300 different policies that are offered for individuals, what will guide them in telling me which of those 300 I ought to go to, and how will we avoid any undue influence from big market players?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, you know, the way that we have thought about the way the exchange will operate, first of all, there will be both a web-based and an in-person function to the exchange, most likely. Obviously, in the case of a web-based enrollment, that information will be available to individuals on an internet type of a basis. So there's not any influence necessarily that can be, and people will have the ability to sort their choices and so forth in ways that they wish to do so. in terms of in-person counseling, if a person were to come in, want some assistance with regards to their choices, again, the charge to the exchange will be one where they are to be a transparent front end around what their options are available to people and what options are available through the individual insurance market. We think that that's an improvement, certainly over today's environment where nobody has that single point of entry where they can go to get that information. The board would likely be governed by a group that would presumably be free from stakeholder influence. That's the goal here. So I think that those are the safeguards that we have in place. So that's sort of how we've envisioned the exchange working in that regard.
Representative Bunn.
Chair and Assistant Commissioners, maybe this is because I'm new to this area, but in terms of establishing the 125 and getting pre-tax benefits, what is preventing us from offering that to self-employed individuals as opposed to people who are linked to employment?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, just so I understand your question, are you asking is there a reason why we wouldn't do that for people who are currently have access to employer-based coverage, or is that...
No, I mean, what you've described so far is in terms of getting the pre-tax benefits only those who are connected to employers. And a lot of individuals in the system are sometimes pointing at something, so maybe it's in there somewhere. I was wondering, those who do not have self-employed or are not attached to an employer, are there some mechanism for them to obtain these pre-tax benefits?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask April Todd-Malbaugh to come down and stand that question. I think I know the answer, but I want to make sure you get the right answer. So.
Members of the committee, April Tadmalmos. Again, in response to your question, employers that do not offer coverage would be eligible to offer the Section 125 plans. It is my understanding that those that are self-employed would not be eligible for all of the benefits of the Section 125 plans, but they could still get pre-tax benefits through buying coverage as they can now under the tax code, which would be to deduct their health insurance as an expense from their state and federal income taxes, but they would not be able to get the deduction from their FICA taxes.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the same question. Independent contractors or self-employed people, and I same thing as Representative Bunn.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any information about take-up rates on the earned income family, that tax credits, especially at lower levels of income?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, I do not. We can certainly get that information for the committee.
Because it seems like your savings here are mostly in that area, so people aren't actually just reading through Don's memo here. I mean, the big percentage of the lower income seems to be coming from that. So that would be helpful information to know.
Yes.
And then the second question I had, do you know when you're going to have language on this and what that's going to look like?
Mr. Chair, Representative Houston, we know what it's going to look like. When we're going to have the language, very shortly, I've been told.
Is it
going to
be one bill, you know?
We do intend to have the Healthy Connections language together in one bill. Thanks.
Members, try to just ask clarifying questions. I think he has about three slides left and he'll be done. So, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Assistant Commissioner Lights. You referred to Minnesota Care Classic as being in the public, could be a public plan, and Minnesota Care 2 as the private market. Can you offer me a working definition of those two differentiations, please, and what's the practical application?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, I'll take a shot at that. Today, at Minnesota Care, what we do is we contract with 9 managed care organizations, just like we contract with those organizations for our medical assistance programs or our general assistance medical care. As I said, HMOs that do business in the state are required by law to participate in our programs. We also have 3 county-based purchasing arrangements that, in essence, counties that come together to form their own managed care organization. And then also Metropolitan Health Plan, of course, is a creature of Hennepin County. So there's 9, there's 4 county-related health plans and 5 nonprofit health plans that we contract with under Minnesota Care. When we talk about Minnesota Care Classic, that's what we're talking about, the current Minnesota Care arrangement. Minnesota Care 2 will be an option only. I mean, they can stay in Minnesota Care, obviously. They'll have to go to Minnesota Care 2. And that will be made available, though, through insurance companies that do individual market business, individual insurance business. As I said, four of the top players won't have to participate under this proposal in that Minnesota Care Fee arrangement. Does that help, Representative Murphy?
It's helpful. I don't quite understand the differentiation, public versus private, in that definition.
One difference is in the individual private market, if you have a pre-existing condition, they don't have to sell you the insurance, whereas in the public programs, you get it. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I'm having a little trouble understanding what happens with this money. Track with me and see if I'm understanding this. People set up these accounts. The exchange helps the employer set up the account. It's, if I'm an employee and I choose to participate in this, I have this pre-tax deduction. And that money goes to the exchange and they hold it. Right. Now, currently, people have these pre-tax accounts that they can use for different kinds of things. If they don't use up the money by a certain point, it's lost, right? Now, I'd like to know how this is intended to work. If I have money in an account there, say I don't have the right amount exactly for this healthcare product that I end up choosing, or say I decide not to choose a healthcare product, or I decide that I can't really afford it, I want my money back. How does all that work?
Mr. Chair, Representative, those are all very good questions, and thanks for the opportunity to do some clarification around that. You know, the accounts that many of us are familiar with are what are called flexible spending accounts oftentimes. It has the use it or lose it provision where you put money in the front end, and if you don't use it for certain services, it reverts back to the employer at the end. What we're proposing to establish here are premium plans, and when an individual would go to the exchange, they would choose the product that they wish to enroll in. The employer then would withhold from their paycheck the amount of the premium on a monthly basis or whatever basis that individual gets paid on. So if it's a biweekly or monthly, what would be withheld from their paycheck pre-tax would be the amount of the premium. And then that amount would be transferred to the exchange, and then the exchange would make payments to the health plan on behalf of that individual for the amount of the premium that they're enrolled in. So in that way, there's a deduction from their paycheck, just as those of us who are employed now have a deduction from our paychecks for the amount of our health insurance coverage. It essentially mirrors that mechanism or that environment for individuals enrolling through the exchange with those pre-tax dollars.
Commissioners, continue.
Mr. Chair, I put up this slide. I believe it's in your packet of information. It's a visual of how the various people in various situations would access health insurance coverage now. It's a diagram of that. I'm not going to go into detail on it, but it's intended to sort of show how people who are employed and offer health insurance coverage use pre-tax premium payments today to purchase private health insurance coverage. And then if individuals are employed with no offer, how they would set up how the 125 plan would be available to them, and how they could use pre-tax dollars to purchase either Minnesota Care coverage if they're eligible for that subsidy, if not, purchase coverage through the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. And then to Representative Bunn's question from earlier, for self-employed or unemployed individuals, their ability to deduct from their taxes premium payments. So, Mr. Chair, overall, the impact of the proposal, we estimate that total new enrollment as a result of the proposal in Minnesota Care is estimated at approximately 15,000 children and 1,200 adults by 2011. We also estimate that an additional 41,000 people will receive benefits from the expanded use of the Section 125 plans. And then individuals who are now purchasing coverage either through the individual market or through MCHER, which is close to 300,000 people, also would receive the benefits of the exchange, the more transparent information, the availability of information to be available to them when they make their choices and select their insurance providers. This slide lists out the cost of the programs. The first line indicates the cost to the Department of Human Services for the changes to the Minnesota Care and Minnesota Care 2 programs. startup costs as it relates to the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange. I should also mention that we that there is a startup cost listed for the exchange, but then a zero cost in the out years. What we're proposing is that the exchange itself would be a self-sustaining entity. We would do that via an add-on to individual insurance premiums that are sold through the exchange. We estimate that that would be approximately 0.5% of premium that would pay for the ongoing operations of the exchange. And then because we will be expanding the use of Section 125 plans in Minnesota, which will be shielding some dollars from taxation, there will be some loss of revenue to the state. Again, the loss of revenue at the state level is insubstantial compared to the, I shouldn't say it's insubstantial, it's less than, substantially less than is probably a better way to phrase that. It's substantially less than the federal loss of revenue, or the federal gain, if you will, if you want to think about it in a positive sense, with a bottom line cost of $30 million over this biennium and approximately $90 million in the out biennium. So in summary, Mr. Chair, again, to get back to what we are after in terms of the overall proposal, we're expanding coverage to more children in Minnesota, as well as providing some choice in the Minnesota Care Program beyond what currently exists. We believe the proposal improves the affordability both for people enrolling in the Minnesota Care Program, certainly premiums being substantially reduced for children, as well as allowing more people to take advantage of tax savings in the private health insurance market. As I mentioned, we believe this actually creates a better market right now by making in the individual market, that market more transparent and promoting more portability of coverage. And finally, we see under the proposal to reward healthy behaviors by focusing on, again, quality and value, not just the volume of services that are being provided through the use of the acute care accounts. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, and Representative Abler.
Thank you. Somebody should say you're doing a good job at trying to do a good thing here. There's a lot of good ideas, a lot of nice ideas of how to do good things floating around, including when we had a press conference on today, and other ones I read in yesterday's introductions, and so many, many good ideas. So somebody should say, way to cover 13,000 into this exchange idea and so on. So there's at least something good said about you. Cause there's many things being said about everybody's ideas these days, but how do you, I like the exchange idea, but I think that having only one is a problem. How do you avoid the exchange becoming MTM relative to special trends and steering people and good insurance brokers going out of business in small towns and all that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, you asked good questions, and thank you very much for the compliment. We appreciate that. We'll take them where we can get them. In terms of steerage in the exchange, I think in terms of that marketplace, trust that people will be able to, given the transparency of the information available to them, and that is a key element, and that has to actually come through. A key tenet of the way markets can function is if people actually have information and have information in an understandable, transparent way, we've generally trusted that they can make reasonably good decisions. And the reason that we think a single exchange works that way is because that's where people can get that single source of information and see what their options are, and then to make choices among those options. On your question about insurance brokers, insurance brokers still under our bill would be able to receive the money for steering people to the exchange. The payments that brokers receive right now for. Thank you very much for all of you who said commission. Between the brokers and the eyes. Broker commissions through the exchange. So that those payments can still be made when brokers help people go to the exchange, help them sort through their choices in the exchange. Payments can still be received from the health plans commissions. In addition, because there's this new requirement that employers set up Section 125 plans, there's an opportunity for brokers to work with employers who don't currently offer health insurance coverage to help those employers set up those Section 125 plans, help those employees to make choices among the plans that are available to them in the individual markets, and receive commissions on those opportunities as well.
Representative Abler.
And so there's some 300,000 or 400,000 uninsured. The number, I think it's 383 is one of the numbers, but they're all out of date. Anyway, but given that number, you think 41,000 of those will access this as non-Minnesota Care people? Is that your best estimate, that of that group, only those would be interested and not the rest of the 200,000 or whatever?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, those are our estimates of what we believe to be the case.
Thank you.
Representative Peason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question was what Representative Abler was getting at. I'm not sure what you mean 41,000 people are expected to benefit. Can you just clarify what that benefit from the tax savings?
Mr. Chair, Representative Keeson, yes. Who aren't currently doing so, who would choose to do so?
So that, Mr. Chair, so those folks may already be insured.
Mr. Chair, Representative Keeson, yes.
Okay. Thank you. And then just another question, Mr. Chair. One thing I'm interested in, Commissioner Osberg said you were going to describe a little bit about the benefit set. I don't think you really got into that in any detail. If you could explain, is this going to be different, I would assume, from a Minnesota Care benefit set, or is that not the current one, or is that not correct? And maybe I just missed the discussion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, the exchange will define the benefit set specifically, but what I was referring to is that we're looking at, in general, the $300 to $500 deductible. Now, we're not necessarily looking at any other major changes in terms of what's covered between Minnesota Care and here, but again, the exchange would define what that benefit set would be.
Okay, so if I could just follow up, Mr. Chair. So we don't, and that's what I was getting at, the terms of what's covered, and we don't know what that will be yet. Then that'll be left to the exchange to determine.
Mr.
Chair, that's what you're saying?
Representative Thiessen, yes.
Okay. And then just so I understand, thank you, Mr. Chair. So under the current Minnesota Care, there's no deductible for anybody. So that $500 that we're putting on a child, for instance, there'll be the reduced premiums. But can you compare what the state would otherwise be paying in terms of that deductible? I mean, is there a cost shift going on here to the people buying the Minnesota Care?
Representative Thiessen, there's, as you said, there in Minnesota Care today for children, there's not a deductible or any copayments. It would not be any cost shifting. I'm not sure if that would be the case. We have some projections as to what the overall premium would be for this Minnesota Care 2 piece, and it would be lower, obviously, than the cost per child in Minnesota Care today.
Mr. Chair, Resident Keyes, if I can just follow up on Commissioner Osberg. The way that we built the premium structure and the cost-sharing requirements as it relates to the Minnesota Care 2 program was that for a family up through the maximum eligibility, which we're proposing to be 300% of poverty, that the amount that they would pay out-of-pocket, including the deductible and premium, would not exceed 2.5% of their income for one kid. And no more than 5% of income for a family so we've explicitly tried to take into account the fact that there will be some upfront cost sharing by reducing the premium on the front end, as well as taking into account the incomes of those individuals.
Mr. You said premium and deductible?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, that's correct. On average.
Okay, Representative Kremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I probably need a little bit more on the pre-tax. Who decides how much goes into the pre-tax? The employee, the employer, the plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tremba, that amount would be determined by the employee based on the amount of the cost of the premium of the product that they've chosen through the exchange.
And how long do they get, excuse me, Mr. Chair, how long do they get before it expires, so to speak, as a looking at a flex plan kind of thing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tremba, they would have money taken out of their account, out of their paycheck, on a periodic basis, meaning the periodicity being if they get paid monthly, it would be taken out monthly out of their paycheck, just as those of us who have employer-based coverage, for example, through the state, our cost-sharing portion of that is taken out of our paychecks each month or each pay period. This would follow a similar model where the amount of the premium and that amount only would be taken out to pay for the health insurance premium, and that money would pass through the exchange directly to the insurer on behalf of the enrollee in the exchange. And so there's not a period of time over which they must spend the account per se. Rather, the dollars would come out of the paycheck and pass through to the insurance company each pay period.
So, Mr. Chair, In other words, it doesn't really look like the flex plan, because in the flex plan you have to use it up in a year. There's no time set. I mean, it can go on for 10 years, or is there a limit? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Tremba, that's correct. You can really think about this much more like an environment where a person is employed and has access to employer-based coverage, in the sense that the money that's being withheld from their paycheck is directly passed through to the insurer. It's done on a pre-tax basis, so they get that benefit, but it's not held in an account other than the amount of time it takes for the exchange to pay the insurer.
And then, Mr. Chair, what if they run out of money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tremba, again, it would be a withdrawal from their paycheck. So presumably it would be that proportion of their paycheck that they can afford to purchase coverage. If they can't afford to purchase coverage, they clearly don't need to have a withdrawal taken from their paycheck. And if they are unable to continue to work, for example, obviously that withdrawing would cease as well.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Gottlob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners, we were talking earlier about portability as an issue here, too, and that being a major issue that we're trying to address in all of this. Can you help me understand how issues like pre-existing conditions, waiting periods would play into all of this?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, right now what we're proposing in the health insurance exchanges are no changes to the current underwriting rules in Minnesota. Right now Minnesota has, we're not a guaranteed issue state, which means if you apply for coverage, you the insurers can deny you for pre-existing conditions coverage. Your alternative is to go to the MTRA program. We would provide, in those cases, a similar ability for people to use pre-tax dollars to purchase MTRA coverage, which again would be an advantage over what they currently have in the marketplace. But we don't explicitly make any changes to the individual insurance market, other than to say that through the exchange for children, we are requiring that the plans that are in that market be community rated, which means that the age there's. The amount that you pay doesn't vary by age for kids enrolling through the exchange.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This first one is for Assistant Commissioner Osberg. Is the Minnesota Care program that we currently have and we're proposing to move forward, could you tell me what the hospitalization cap on that particular program is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, there's only a hospital inpatient cap of $10,000 on certain individuals, adults without kids and parents over 175% of the federal poverty guidelines. There's no such cap on anyone else, especially not children.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Osberg, some of the people would be subject to that cap currently on Minnesota Care if we heard from them, I believe, in committee last year. And would they have the ability to migrate from Minnesota Care to a private plan through this connector if that would be an advantage for them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, again, adults are not eligible for Minnesota Care 2. It's just for children. So they would not be able to do that. Now, they may be eligible for another plan like Minnesota Conference of Health Association, which provides coverage to people who are uninsurable. But again, it's a question of affordability.
Mr. Chair and Assistant Commissioner, I think that's one of the things that I think we really need to look at is providing this. I looked at the connector, what's called the connector program for Massachusetts, called the connector program for Massachusetts and Indiana and others. I think it offers a variety of opportunities for individuals, small companies, and groups to purchase insurance who currently have it unaffordable or unavailable. And I would like to see this process expanded to be able to uptake a much broader market and also to drive the private insurance market at the small business level in particular. I think that there's more opportunities for the connector here in Minnesota that I would like to see and pursue. I'm talking with the business people and folks in my district. They're very excited about this opportunity. This is clearly the area where we need to focus on is on the availability of small insurance products for individuals and small businesses. And I think that we perhaps what's seen here is a great first step, but I would like to see it broadened out to more groups and individuals.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to our guests. I'm still trying to understand kind of roles and responsibilities if this rolls out, particularly related to Minnesota Care 2. And that I'm going back to my little hypothetical family that you started with, of the two parents and the two kids, and they choose to take the cheaper premium, so they're in the Minnesota 2 product, and so they've got a 500 or maybe it'll be less deductible, let's say 500 since that's what you've thrown out at this point, a $500 deductible on each kid. And the two kids climb a tree and they're wrestling around and they both fall and one's got a broken leg and one's got a broken arm. And so all of a sudden the family has $1,000 of obligation. Who is in charge of collecting that deductible from the family? Is it the health plan they enrolled in, it's the exchange, it's the doctor and or hospital that treated them, it's the state, you know, who's the collector and who gets left holding the bag if it's hard to get that $1,000 out of that household budget?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, it would work just like it works in the market today, private market today, the provider collects the deductible. And then, of course, the insurance plan spells that out in an explanation of benefits to the enrollee. So it worked the way it does today in the private sector, and that is the provider collects the deductible.
Representative Loeffler.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I can just follow up on one other question, just trying to understand roles and responsibilities. It sounds like the connector or the exchange is going to be a nonprofit entity, but it'll be mostly dealing with for-profit products primarily, not necessarily, and yet I see it's the Department of Human Services and the Department of Health that's sort of taking the lead on this. And what is the role of the Department of Commerce then in regulating the products and or the operation of the exchange, or is anyone in charge of regulating the exchange and its operation?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler. Products that are sold through the exchange would still need to be approved by the Department of Commerce. They still have that responsibility just as they do now. Again, we haven't made changes with regards to the rating requirements or the rules with regards to the individual in the individual market. There are a number of state-sanctioned entities that operate on a nonprofit basis. For example, the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association being one of those entities, similarly, which is governed by a board. And is sort of a quasi-governmental sort of entity, if you will. We envision the exchange operating very similarly with some oversight, likely from the health department as well on the exchange.
Thank you.
Representative Hodge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions of clarification. Under the Section 125 plans that their employers would be required to set up, would the employers have an opportunity to also contribute within that plan with the same tax benefits as they currently would have for a write-off?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, yes, they would.
One final question for clarification. Also under the 125 plans, you said that the contribution of the employee is made based on the premiums. Are they able to contribute in excess of the premiums for future deductibles or any unanticipated costs?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, I believe they're only allowed to put away that amount that is the amount of their premium.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just first, I want to comment on your answer to Representative Loeffler's question about oversight and, you know, that it's the health department. I think that, you know, I understand that the products would be regulated by commerce and so on, but this, I think what you're proposing is this entity that's going to be handling lots and lots of money from individuals, and that's going to be passing through and going to these health products. So I have a real concern about that. But that wasn't my main question. I wanted to ask about the transparency piece that you've mentioned a number of times, and I just don't see
where we get transparency from this, other than the fact that it's a one-stop shop. But it seems to me that the difficulty is going to be somewhat analogous to the medical records exchange problem, you know, that everybody does it differently, and that it might be a huge administrative problem to get these various products in some order where you can compare apples to apples. And I just don't, haven't heard any explanation of how that's going to happen, other than that it's going to be on some website or something. But I mean, that's a, seems to me there's a whole lot you got to go through before you can just put it on a website.
Mr. Chair, Senator Liebling, you're correct in the sense that that doesn't exist in today's marketplace, and it is an administrative task to do that. As I've mentioned, we are requesting funding to do this. We're not proposing to do it for free because it can't be done that way. There is a amount of work that goes into being able to provide that information in a transparent and understandable way for people. We don't believe it's being done well in the marketplace right now. There are certainly people attempting to do it, and it's better than nothing that's being done right now, but we believe that it does need to be accomplished on a larger scale. You're absolutely right that it's a challenge, and we don't underestimate that challenge, but we also think that to not do it means that we continue to have a marketplace that just doesn't function with that information, and that can be provided more transparently and more understandably for people than it currently is.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up to that. But you're not proposing to impose any requirements on the insurers themselves in order to give the information in an understandable way. I mean, we had, I think it was Senator Durenberger that was talking about having a uniform, maybe it wasn't, somebody was talking about having uniform forms that insurance companies would use for various things, and I don't hear any of that here. I mean, is this all on the, you know, the end, we give you the $12 million and then you figure out how to do all this without anything being asked of the plans themselves?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, there's a number of components that are going on. We're talking about the Healthy Connections today. There's also a parallel effort that's going on that is proposed that to streamline some of the administrative issues at between health plans and providers. That really gets to the issue of common forms and having commonality around billing and coding and so forth. With regards to the plans themselves, what we really do envision, and it's a good question, is that what the exchange would have some responsibility for doing is in creating that information and making it understandable for people and making it as transparently comparable for individuals as possible. It's likely that the exchange will need to receive that information in certain ways from plans. I guess what we're saying at this point is those are some details that need to be worked out. This is a relatively new proposal. And I think it's fair to say we haven't worked through every single detail with regards to how things will work. The structure is there, and the concept of what we're after is there, and there are some details that will need to be worked out, such as the one that you raised around how would information from the plans be received such that it can be turned into something understandable for individuals.
Representative Thiessen, you get the last question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Minnesota Care 2 is not guaranteed issue, what's the impact on that on the capitated rates on regular Minnesota Care? Are we going to create a high-risk pool in Minnesota Care?
Commissioner.
Have you, or what, yeah, if you could just make
your chairman, Representative Thiessen, the rates in Minnesota Care, the regular Minnesota Care, is set over time based on experience. That's true. So to the extent that there is any kind of adverse selection to Minnesota Care, they may adjust, those rates may be adjusted upward. That's a possibility. We thought about that, but there's no, at this point, there's no way to predict that happen.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Members, we're out of time. It's 2:00, so I'm going to adjourn the meeting.